Hello, everyone. This is Chapter 8, The Thing to Come. It's a short chapter today, but I hope you enjoy it. When the children had studied Morse code until dots and dashes swam in their heads, even with their eyes closed, Rhonda called them inside. It was early evening now. The light in the dining room window was a soft amber color, and all through the house, the wooden floors, curiously enough, groaned and creaked like a ship at sea. "That sometimes happens after a morning rain," said Rhonda, as the children took seats at the table. "Don't worry, it's a sound old house. We won't sink." She set several pages of notes before each of them. "Now that you understand your mission and have a good start on your Morse code, Mr. Benedict would like for you to understand better what we're up against." The children's ears perked up. There was more? Rainey began to flip through his papers, some of which bore faint smears of peanut butter. "Number 2 has summarized everything in these notes," Rhonda said. "If you read quickly, you should be able to finish before supper. Mr. Benedict will come by in a little while to answer any questions."
"He wants us to read all of this?" Constance said, as if she couldn't believe Mr. Benedict's nerve.
Rhonda only smiled and went out. The children, all except Constance, who was too busy humping, set to their notes. Sticky read so quickly that he seemed hardly to have started before he'd finished. He sat quietly, deep in thought, waiting for the others. 10 minutes later, Rainey had finished too, and Kate, noting this, set aside her last few pages and asked the boys to fill her in. What the children learned from the notes was this. The Institute on No Man's Sand Island generated all its own electricity using the power of the tides, an endless source of energy. The Institute's title, turbines, were considered the best in the entire world. They were also capable of producing enough energy to power 100 institutes, let alone one. These turbines had been invented by a man named Ladrop the Curtain, who, as a young scientist, had published impressive papers on a wide variety of topics, everything from tidal energy to mapping the brain, until abruptly the papers stopped. No one had heard from him for many years. Then, one day, he reappeared and founded the Institute, apparently having turned his genius to matters of education. There was no doubt. Ladrop the Curtain was the sender. And yet, about certain things, there was quite a lot of doubt, indeed. For instance, the hidden messages being sent from the Institute were broadcast only a few times each day and on a very weak signal. But the tidal turbines should be able to produce an enormous amount of energy, much more than necessary to power the Institute, and certainly enough to transmit the sender's messages on a high-powered signal rather than a weak one. Why, then, had Curtin made his turbines so extravagant if he didn't intend to use that extra power? And why did he send out his messages intermittently when he could be broadcasting around the clock? "He's been saving it up," Rainey said, narrowing his eyes. "It's what Mr. Benedict was trying to explain this morning. There's something bad approaching, some new thing."
"The thing to come," said Mr. Benedict, who had appeared in the doorway. With a nod of approval, he joined them at the table, accompanied by Number 2. "It sounds as if you've finished the notes. I know they're complicated. Do you have any questions about them?"
"I think I understand them pretty well," said Constance. The others looked at one another in disbelief. "Right now, the hidden messages are sent at low power, several times a day by the sender, a man named Ladrop the Curtain. But his tidal turbines are extremely powerful, so it sounds like at some point he's going to start boosting the strength of his messages."
"Bravo, Constance," Mr. Benedict said. "Well done."
The other children scowled.
"Well done, all of you," Mr. Benedict added,
with a wink that made them feel a bit better. "Now then, do you have other questions?"
"I do," said Kate.
"What happens when the sender boosts the power?"
"We know only one thing for certain," said Mr. Benedict. "With just a very slight increase, the sender will eliminate the need for televisions or radios to transmit his messages. He'll be able to broadcast his messages straight into everyone's minds. Even those of us with an uncommon love of truth will no longer be able to avoid the broadcasts."
Sticky looked horrified. How will that feel?"
"Don't tell me we'll hear those kids' voices in our heads," Kate said, a disgusted look on her face.
"In rare cases, perhaps," said Mr. Benedict, "with exceptionally sensitive minds. But most of us will simply feel irritable and confused, essentially the way we feel now whenever the television is on and the messages are being broadcast."
"You said with a very slight increase," said Rainey. "What happens when the power gets boosted all the way, when the messages are sent at full strength?"
Mr. Benedict tapped his nose. "That is when we'll hear voices in our heads. I can't imagine it will be pleasant."
"It sounds awful," Kate said, her lip curling at the very thought. "So why does he want us to all think we're crazy?"
A shadow had crossed Rainey's face.
"That's not what he wants, is it, Mr. Benedict? At least not the main thing. Otherwise, what's the point of waiting?"
"Okay, now I'm confused," said Kate, and the other children signaled their agreement.
"I believe Rainey is wondering," said Mr. Benedict, "why the sender would wait all this time to boost the power if he could have done so years ago. Am I right?"
Rainey nodded.
"I agree," Mr. Benedict said.
"The voices aren't the point. They are the side effect, the unintended consequence of a dark and ambitious undertaking. The sender has spent all these years preparing people for something, preparing them for the thing to come."
"But what is the thing to come?" said Constance.
"That is precisely what we must find out," said Mr. Benedict, "before it is too late."
"And if we are too late?" asked Sticky nervously. "Will it really be that bad?"
Mr. Benedict grew solemn. "For us, and for all the people like us, all those whose minds cleave so strongly to the truth, I am convinced it will be most disagreeable. You must understand that the sender has not gone to such enormous trouble for so many years and at such extravagant expense to allow any interference with his plans. He has already shown himself to be quite ruthless. No, children, I believe that by virtue of our mind's resistance, we shall, how to put it, I believe we shall receive special attention." At these words, a black cloud of possibility bloomed in the children's minds, a darkness in which scary thoughts flickered like bolts of lightning. Special attention. Their mouths went dry as bones. Rainey's mind was a whirl. Part of him wanted not to believe Mr. Benedict. Could he really be trusted? He was an odd man, and the things he told them were odder still. It would be such a relief to think his predictions about the thing to come were nothing more than wild speculation. And yet, Rainey did trust Mr. Benedict, had trusted him almost immediately. What troubled Rainey was that he so badly wanted to trust Mr. Benedict, wanted to believe in this man who had shown faith in him, wanted to stay with these children who seemed to like and respect Rainey as much as he did them. And so the question was not whether Rainey could trust Mr. Benedict, but whether he could trust himself. Who in his right mind would actually want to be put in danger just because that let him be a part of something? Rainey didn't know. He only knew he didn't want to go back.